Thank you to the choir for the lovely contemporary rendition of this traditional Transylvanian house blessing, as it turns out. I have found this music haunting from when we first sang it in the choir last year sometime. It runs through my head at night when I would rather be sleeping. And you'll see the words on the cover of the Order of Service. And you can find them on plates and on embroidery. I don't want to distract you from what I'm saying. I found the embroidery in Budapest, and I found the plate and a roadside stall near the pottery town of Corund in Romania. It's very common. But because I've sung the words so many times, often when I'm singing, I don't pay too much attention to the words, and then I suddenly realize what I've been singing all these years. The meaning has started to sink in. Not that I truly understand it all, but it intrigues me. It seems so sure, so certain, even if it does seem a bit circular, perhaps. I find myself asking, does my faith have such a solid, concrete foundation? Foundations are very real for me right now, as Al is rebuilding the foundation of our 85-year-old garage. The walls sat directly on the old concrete pad. However, as the years went by, the yard was filled in to improve the drainage around the house, so soil sort of came right up against the wood walls, and ivy and morning glories did their thing, grew right in and out around all the siding. Of course, the paint's faded, and leaves accumulated along one wall at least. So as the bottom of the walls rotted, they have literally slipped off their foundation. One wall looked mostly straight until you put a level up against it, but the other one tilted significantly. It looked decrepit. And it leaked, too. You could see the holes in the roof when you looked up from the inside. It was decrepit, shaky almost. Following up on the theology in this song has inspired me to do a couple of things. First, I was in on a Partner Church Council-sponsored conference call on the theology of our partner churches in Transylvania and elsewhere. 11 other folks joined me on an exploration of the topic, and of course I raised this piece again, like, how does it work in their daily lives? How do they live it out? No one really had an answer for that. I was also inspired to attend a theological symposium that was held in Transylvania this past summer in Romania. It was in the town, city of Colosvar, where their denominational headquarters are, and where their seminary students are trained, and where they have a Unitarian residential high school. In fact, it was in the high school lecture hall that we heard our presentations. This lecture hall, built in 1796, put me in mind of my image of Hogwarts. At least once inside. On the outside, the backhoe was busily digging up the sidewalk to lay paving stones, and one morning I saw the backhoe with its bucket right on that old, worn, dished step, ready to grab it. But it backed off and went for the sidewalk immediately beside it. The sense of history there in that hall was so vivid. Around all these old walls, wood wainscoted walls, was huge portraits of all the previous bishops. I heard that in the communist era, it was communist guys instead of all Unitarian guys. We sat on benches like one sees in lecture halls today, you know, with long desks in front of you, but these were very old. The Transylvanian Unitarians are part of our Unitarian Foundation. After the Protestant Reformation in the early 1500s, many people now could read the newly translated Christian scriptures for the first time. But there were a few people, who used their reason rather than accepting it as the revealed truth, and they determined that they could only see one God portrayed in the scriptures. Of course, this was still heresy, not easily accepted anywhere in Europe. One of these people was Francis David of Transylvania, now part of Romania. David was ripe for change, for he converted several times, first from Catholic to Lutheran, then to Christian Reformed, and finally to Unitarian. By the late 1560s, he was preaching a Unitarian Christian theology to large crowds, and with his charismatic oratory gathered many followers. There were at least 300 congregations by the time of his death in 1579. The Unitarian King Sigismund, Unitarian King, the only one, died in 1571, though, and his successor was a Catholic and not as keen on this Unitarian theology. And so he instituted a rule, no more new changes. Well, David couldn't do that. He was always interested in something new. And so he was imprisoned and died later that year, 1579. In 2001, there were 80,000 Unitarians reported in Romania and more in Hungary. My understanding of their theology is that they are still quite true to their faith from that period. It's quite a contrast to Canada, where there are maybe 5,200 confessing Unitarians, that is, adult members of congregations. I don't know that we ever have the only church in town, or form the majority even in a small region, which the Transylvania Unitarians do, or at least did in the past in places. Certainly today they are very much a Hungarian-speaking minority in a Romanian country and a much less accepting population of both Hungarian-speaking and Romanian-speaking others. Plus there are a lot of folks who don't go to any church. I visited our partner church in Kolbotfalva after the symposium, and there I had the opportunity of witnessing the confirmation of two young folks at a neighboring church in the village right next door. The minister of our partner church had helped them because they were without a minister for a while. He had helped with the confirmation class. North American coming-of-age programs help youth articulate their own beliefs. In Transylvania, they teach the catechism, all 136 questions with the exact answers. I watched with amazement as these two 14-year-olds, I believe they were, a boy and a girl, answered question after question from memory, giving the answers word for word. No hesitations, no false starts, just the answers, clear and confident. Reverend Shongor said he only asked some of the questions, some of those 136 questions. It took about at least 15 minutes. Only about 40 of them, he said. The confirmation ritual was part of a much longer church service. The church had two main areas of seating. The men sat over here on the minister's left in rows that went that way, and the women were over here. There was a small place in front. The newly arrived minister, who had not been there all year for the classes, but gave her sermon from the raised pulpit some 12 to 15 feet up. Chonger muttered to me afterwards that he didn't like the way she leaned over the pulpit. Maybe she was trying to get a little closer to them, I'm wondering. I don't know. However, she did sound like she was lecturing children. Then, after a song accompanied on the organ, which was played by Reverend Shongor, he gave his admonitions to the young folks. Sounded to me like a second sermon. And then all the questions and answers, alternating from one child to the next. And then the children took their first communion with the minister. It seems to me that this Transylvanian blessing that we sang earlier is, in some ways at least, a summary of their theology. The initial paper presented at the symposium was from the bishop of the Transylvanian Church, Dr. Arpad Szabo, and he gave us his interpretation of it. He says, quote, "Unitarian religion comprises the essentials of personal religion, the close relation of the human soul to God, the reality of prayer, the consecration of life to the service of God by doing his will and by loving one's fellow humans, the restoration of the sinner by repentance and forgiveness, the sense of deep and assured trust in God in all the changing events of life. There is no region of life where our religion could be left out as having nothing to say." End quote. He emphasizes that we as Unitarians use our minds, our reason, to figure out what the scriptures mean for us today and what is right and wrong ethically. Indeed, he says, human experience is a more reliable guide than ancient authorities. Consequently, he says, the Unitarian faith is a progressive one, and we follow truth as we see it. He says, quote, "We as Unitarians believe first of all and most profoundly in one God. We erect our churches for the worship of one God. This is the bond which unites us as a religious community. Beyond this, we formulate no creed. We assert that it is the duty of each human being to be diligent in his or her search for truth and faithful to the light God reveals to us. We reverence God so deeply that we feel we cannot fully describe him." End quote. He relates the important principles of their theology. Freedom of faith is first, the ability to discern the form, I think he means here the church institution of your choice, that best fits us as individuals, and freedom of thought, which comes with responsibility. Common sense and the requirements of truth must accompany freedom of thought. Inner authority, the use of reason and conscience and tolerance are also central values of the Transylvanian Unitarian faith. It sounds quite congruent with us in many ways. They too have no formal confession or creed, although they do have statements that reflect their identity as Unitarians. Historically, they did not have a confession because in David's time, it was dangerous to lay out new ideas baldly. After all, he wasn't supposed to bring in any further innovations. Bishop Szabo goes on to state that, quote, "Faith is a precondition to the appearance of religion. Faith is a precondition to the appearance of religion. Religion, church, and theology develop from faith. Faith is an individual matter, but religion, and especially church, are of many. It should be common with many others. Without this commonality, it cannot maintain a religious community, and there is no hope for the future without a strong church institution that has as its basis a confession as source and frame of its religion." Given the nature of the symposium, focusing on the 21st century and the future of liberal religion in it, I wonder if he was trying to tell us North Americans something. But we are back to the beginning, where there is faith. I don't know if this foundation of faith is ever questioned by many or even any Transylvanian Unitarians. I do know that they too struggle to fill their pews. Another speaker, speaking to the topic of their liturgy, said that they attract only 10% of their members. Just because they are Unitarian doesn't mean they feel obligated to go to church, I guess, whether they live in the more rural villages or in the city. Have they lost their faith, or is it something else, maybe the liturgy that doesn't speak to many young people? I have no answer to this, of course. But I am back to foundations. I'm wondering, what is the foundation of my religion? Is it crumbly and decrepit, in need of shoring up and reconstruction? Or is it solid and strong, quietly there when I need it. Foundations are one of those things you don't often think about. Only when they fail do they come to mind, and failure may come most often in times of crisis or transition. I do know that when I was living out in my cabin in Newfoundland, what I missed most was a community such as this. And that was the main reason we did not stay there. For me, the religious community is my foundation, the church. The older fellow who shares my taste in lemon meringue pie, and I'm referring to Old Harold, and the other one who shares my interest in the outdoors. All those folks who want to question rather than to accept easy answers. This knowing myself, knowing who I am through the community of which I am a part, is my foundation. All the rest is built on this keystone. And there is so much built on top of that phrase, religious community. God, holiness, interconnectedness, the goodness of human nature, generosity. I won't describe the doors and windows. My question for you today is, I wonder what it is that grounds you in your daily life. What is your foundation? In what do you have faith? Amen.